You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. We're going to go to the Progressive Guest Line in just a minute. Vinny Bonsignor will join us, Las Vegas Review-Journal, on the Raiders. Hey, there are scratches, there are dents, and unexpected natural events. If life throws you uh-ohs, just say, better get Mako. Head to Mako.com to get an online estimate today. The Raiders went 6-3 last year, finished 8-8. And again, another year for John Gruden. And a team, again, landing in a new spot in a brand new city last year, but didn't really get to have that same sort of level of feeling that you may get from this team this year. But they have not made the playoffs in the last four seasons, so I'm sure there is a sense of urgency. They were also affected strongly by COVID-19. So, again, waiting for Vinny Bonsignor to join us to give us a little preview on this team. Derek Carr is still their quarterback. But, like I said, there was a collapse with this team late in the season. A 6-3 start, looking good, but in the end, they finish 8-8 and out of the playoff run. Vinny Bonsignor joining us now on our Progressive Guest Line as we preview the Raiders. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. So as I was talking earlier, this team went 6-3, finished 8-8. Give us a little detail before we preview. Give us a review of what happened to the team late in the season.
Well, I could point to three games that really basically did the Raiders in, and it was the defense that was at fault. Three times over the second half of the season at home, the Raiders offense left the field with a lead at 1:43 left against the Kansas City Chiefs, 19 seconds left with no timeouts left for the Miami Dolphins in the fourth quarter. And then in overtime against the Chargers, three times in the second half of the season where the offense left the Raiders defense the lead with that kind of time left or in that kind of situation. And unfortunately, the Raiders defense wasn't up to the challenge. And that's literally the difference between them winning 8 games and winning 11 games. I think at the time, they also understood there was a lot that they needed to do to get that fixed, so that they're not in that situation, and they're in a better position to hold those leads late in the season, hold those leads late in games, and they feel like they've done that. So we'll see. It was the defense that just wasn't able to step up to the challenge in key moments last year at home, and that's what they wanted to fix, and they feel like a combination of that, getting their fans back in the stadium, could have them pointed in the right direction.
Let's talk about that defense. How much of it is an overhaul? How many players did they bring in? And what is some of the names that are going to be impactful that weren't on that team last year?
It's a mixture of both. You know, they've invested a lot in terms of draft capital and free agency capital in building that defense and up until last year. And then they added a unique Ngakoue. They just added K.J. Wright. They've added Casey Hayward. They've added Denzel Perryman. They added Gerald McCoy. They drafted Trayvon Morig. So they drafted a player they feel they really hit gold with on Nate Hobbs, a slot cornerback from Illinois. That coupled with Max Crosby and Jonathan Hankins and Clee Farrell and Max Crosby. But the biggest addition, really, aside from the talent, which is, you know, that you obviously have to have that, I think is the new defensive coordinator, Gus Bradley, and the staff that he brought with him. You know, you can feel and see that there's a different level of messaging and teaching and communication going on from the coaching staff to the players on that side of the ball. So the combination of the new coaching staff, players that they've invested in over the last couple of years, you know, maturing and taking step forwards, and then the additions that I mentioned, they feel like they could get this from what was given up 30 points a game last year, maybe into the low 20s or even lower. And if that happens, then the whole narrative changes about the Raiders.
If the defense was the one that cost them some games, how good was the offense? How good was it to get to the 6-3 mark to then later on see the collapse?
They finished with the 10th most points in the NFL. They averaged the 10th most points per game in the NFL last year, which was plenty good enough. Every team right ahead of them made the playoffs, and a couple of teams right below them made the playoffs. So this was a playoff-worthy offense. I don't expect any sort of deviation from that. In some respects, the Raiders' offense can be even better when you think about young guys like Henry Ruggs and Bryan Edwards taking steps forward. Kenyon Drake, an addition at running back to help Josh Jacobs, playing in conjunction with him, sometimes in lieu of him, helping both players get it into late game situations and late season situations in a much better physical place. And then, of course, you've got Derek Carr going into year four with John Gruden. He's coming off a career year last year. And the guy by the name of Darren Waller over there, tight end number 83, that is one of the best in the NFL.
I'm always curious about Derek Carr because I know, I get it, the media makes up stuff and people on internet can make a story larger than it is. But I feel like every quarterback that's available, there was always this connection to Gruden and the Raiders. Like, he's more of a Gruden guy than Derek Carr is. And yet, here's Derek Carr throwing for 4,000 yards and still working with the head coach.
Yeah, and, I think the irony of it all is that, when John Gruden took over, everybody, assumed that Derek Carr was on the first bus out of town, that John Gruden was going to go get his guy, his veteran guy. Well, 4 years later, he has his veteran guy, this guy by the name of Derek Carr, who John Gruden, who now is a veteran and who now is, graduating from the John Gruden, coaching and offense lab. This is a guy that's just immersed himself in this offense and with John Gruden. And in a lot of ways, they're joined at the hip. He's taken Derek, this offense, to a whole other level in terms of how he understands it, how he commands it, how he's able to operate it at the line of scrimmage. So, I think a lot of this also goes back to the contract that John Gruden got. A lot of people make a big thing of the money and the years, and I get it. It's a headliner, it's an eye catcher. But in reality, what the Raiders were doing was saying, we haven't been doing this right for the last 20 years. We keep stopping and starting and bringing in new regimes and changing quarterbacks and changing coaches and general managers and the roster, and it's gotten us nothing. What the Raiders thought, and we'll see if they were on the right track, but Mark Davis, their owner, felt like John Gruden was the guy that he wanted to get this thing in order. And he told them, look, I'm going to give you the necessary time, the necessary money, the necessary security to do this the right way, not in a way that's going to build fleeting success, but hopefully prolonged success. And when you look at what John Gruden's done in terms of rebuilding this roster and not resisting the urge to go get his guy at quarterback for a short-term thing or just go strictly with veterans for short-term success, he's rebuilt this roster with young players and a young foundation and invested the time in a young quarterback at the time, Derek Carr, who's now becoming a veteran and a really efficient quarterback. So it kind of goes against the whole John Gruden, narrative out there or scouting report out there. And it's indicative of the fact that he understands that it might not happen overnight, but I have the necessary time to get this thing corrected. And that's really what the Raiders are trying to do.
How will they use the running back situation? They got Jacobs and Kenyon Drake. Is this a double running back situation? Would one guy carry the ball more? How does that backfield look?
Well, I think Josh Jacobs ultimately ends up, with the most carries and the most yards. But Josh is coming off two straight years of 1,000 or more yards rushing. That's the first time that's happened around here since a guy by the name of Marcus Allen. So it tells you how long it's been since they've had consistency production-wise at that position. The issue for Josh has been he's dealt with injuries the first few years of his career. And you add on a 17th game to the schedule, and I think the Raiders looked at that situation and said, we need a lot of help in terms of or quality help in terms of bringing somebody in here, investing in somebody that they believed could be not just a complement to Josh Jacobs, but somebody that could hold down the fort for extended periods in order to, like I said earlier, guarantee as much as possible that Josh is going to be at his strongest or at his best or still have gas left in the tank in late game situations and then over the course of an entire season, which we now add the 17th game. So I think Josh ends up with the most, yards and the most carries, but I think Kenyon Drake is going to have a big part of this offense. And I know that, that John Gruden coveted him. He's a guy that a talent and a versatility type of a back that he's admired from afar. And I think that, he's cooking up a lot of different ways to use him, whether it's as a runner, lining up as a wide receiver. I think you're going to see a lot of creative ways that Kenyon Drake figures into this offense.
Vinny Bonsignor joins us, Las Vegas Review-Journal, talking Raiders. A larger picture question here, and I'm sure the players would probably say, nah, you know, listen, I'm here to play football regardless, but you kind of touched on something early in the interview, which was the sort of the initial arrival in Las Vegas and having it be tampered with COVID. How much did that affect the team to play in an empty stadium when they knew it should have been electric being the new team in the town?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the three games that I mentioned, they were all at Allegiant Stadium. And, you know, I know that we were up in the press box and I was thinking to myself, what would this place be like right now with 65,000 Raider fans here, you know, making life difficult for Patrick Mahomes, making life difficult for Justin Herbert, making life difficult at a time for, you know, Fitzsimmons for the Miami Dolphins. And yet, at the time, felt like you're playing in a museum or a library. That's how quiet it was. So I think that, you know, when the Raiders kind of fast forward to Monday night, September 13th against the Baltimore Ravens at a sold out Allegiant Stadium, I think what they're envisioning is a stadium and an atmosphere and an environment that's going to be beneficial to them. And that was another part of the reason why, you know, getting this stadium, getting this future for themselves locked down for the next 30 years and beyond was so important. They've never really had, they had the black hole. Yes, the Oakland, you know, Coliseum was kind of a nostalgic place, but it's not, whether you're talking about their homes in Los Angeles or in Oakland, none of it is going to look like what Allegiant Stadium is about ready to look and sound like. And I think that over the course of time, and for the Raiders, they hope it's like immediately, that place is going to be an asset for them, just like Seattle is, for the Seahawks. And you go to New Orleans or even Kansas City, those venues are assets to those teams in terms of helping them on the field. Not just in the with the bank account, but and I think that the Raiders believe Allegiant Stadium could have that effect for them as well.
Vinny, great stuff. Really, really appreciate your time. Hope to catch up with you as soon as the season progresses.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
You too. Vinny Bonsignor, Las Vegas Review-Journal on the Raiders, his preview. Interesting stuff about not being able to feel that energy. I mean, I can't imagine. Again, you talk to players, they'll probably tell you, yeah, it's still my job. I'm going to go out there and play, you know, no excuses, et cetera. But as he mentioned, can you imagine playing Kansas City at home and being in the game and being ready to take a victory, being ready to beat the Chiefs and not have that extra level? You know, look, Seattle doesn't take it for granted, right? There's a whole 12th man thing. There's a flag that goes up. They know it's hard. They know it's loud there. They don't just go, hey, it doesn't really matter if there's 65,000 or not. It does matter when there's 65,000. It does, especially in a place where the noise can be directed right down to the field. Autzen Stadium in Oregon, for example, is not a place that holds 100,000 people, but it's one of the loudest in college football. Just the way the architect designed that stadium, it contains the noise in. You go to the Big House in Michigan, there's 100,000+, but it's more like a large contact lens and the noise tends to go up and out. Some of these stadiums are designed to really penetrate the noise down onto the field, and they didn't have that at all. In these close games that mattered, where you could get a little bit of an edge, if not a lot of an edge, they didn't have it at all as the new kids in Las Vegas. All right, we'll continue and wrap up a wake-up call here on a Friday as we continue on Sports Map Radio.